Every school.
I'd like to bring the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency to order.
Jeez.
Apologize for being a couple minutes late. Lunch was good. I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 405A. Bob, give us a brief description of Senate Bill 405A, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 405A eliminates the provision for an owner, contractor, or subcontractor to withhold his retainage an amount in excess of 5% of contract price if agreed by parties to the contract.
Great, and if we have somebody that knows what they're talking about. Senator Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Evidently, the proponents couldn't find anybody that knew what they were talking about, so I'm here instead. For the record, my name is Chip Shields. I represent North and Northeast Portland in the Oregon State Senate, District 22. In the previous session, we worked in my committee on the issue of prompt payment and the withholding of retainage and the challenges of cash flow that that provides to particularly smaller subcontractors. We had a bill that couldn't quite thread the needle in the Senate on the Senate floor last time. This bill is a consensus bill of the industry as well as labor, and essentially what it does is on line 12 you'll see that the exception on retainage is removed, and the practice has been that people were using the exception to withhold retainage of up to 10%. This basically says, and again, I'm not an expert in this, and the experts will come up behind you, behind me, that this will really make true retainage max out at 5%, which will go a long way towards increasing the cash flow of the contractors in this state. This bill was brought to me by a constituent company that had been around since the 50s, and he just told me horror stories about them getting their part of the job done early on in the construction cycle, but then not being able to be paid the retainage on it until years later. Told me a story of a construction company in Florida that was holding back $180,000 from them. Heard another story from him about how when he would try to, you know, collect on the retainage dollars, they say, well, you know, the job's not done and we've still got another 3 or 4 months before we're going to be able to release it, but, you know, make an offer and maybe we can come to an agreement. So he said, all right, how about if I cut off 4% off the price? Done, we'll get you a check tomorrow. So it's that kind of monkey business that we were trying to get our arms around, that that, you know, that's not the intention of the statute, and I think this this bill, again, which is a consensus bill, gets us closer to having a fair process for you know, the owners, the primes, and the subcontractors. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And this committee is familiar with consensus bills from the Senate, as we had one a couple days ago.
No comparison, Mr. Chair.
So are there any questions from the committee? Representative Johnson.
Comment, Mr. Chair, but Senator, thank you for your work on this. You know, this issue of retainage has been a confusing issue within the industry for a long time, and it's hopeful that this could be a real step forward to kind of put this behind and let's move on and get folks back to work. So thanks for what you've done here.
Good. Thank you. We're in the middle of work session, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind me getting back.
I think we can do without you. Thank you very much for
thank you.
Paybacks.
Thank you very much for being here today. With that, Carl Redman, Dave Thompson, and, well, let's just try those two first, since I can't get four people.
Good afternoon, Representative Holdy, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to be here and give you a little bit of background from our perspective on this. So I am Carl Redman with Bear Electric. I'm also the president of Independent Electrical Contractors Association of Oregon, as well as I chair that Government Affairs Committee. So the comments I'm giving to you are from my own experiences as well as similar stories from other members of our association. And just briefly, a few facts that I just want to give you about retention is money that's been earned by the person performing the work, whether it's a general contractor or the subcontractor. It's not money that's in dispute. It's been earned and it's held. The second fact to point out about it is it's not held in trust. So this isn't money that is set aside and protected someplace. This is money that is can be commingled in whoever's holding it, operations and cash flow. So it is at risk. And the third thing, an important fact about retention, it's a growth inhibitor. As we try to grind our way out of a recession, downturn, and we try to build our businesses back, hire employees, buy equipment and materials, the profit margins that we make on the work we do is very commonly less than the dollar amount of retention held on those projects. Those are the dollars that we need to be able to hire more people, buy more equipment, more tools. So without that, you have the option of borrowing money. That's more challenging these days. So essentially, it slows down how fast we can grow as we grind down out of economy when we don't have those dollars we've earned available for our use. I can tell you from some experiences, you know, this is a whole supply chain wide issue. It's not a subcontractor versus general contractor versus owner. It goes from the top all the way through the transactions from one end to the other. I can tell you of situations that we've been involved with and other members have had where they never saw that retention due to the failure of the entity that lent the money through a dispute or litigation between the lender and the borrower. Those funds were never released. Those people never got their retention. There are other cases where, for whatever reason, I had some where a general contractor, don't know the reasons behind it, but had to file bankruptcy. Because those dollars are not held separate in trust, through the bankruptcy, those dollars were lost to us. It wasn't anything that we could go to get anyplace. You know, you can have a subcontractor go through those same problems, but the retention stops at that level. There aren't material suppliers that allow you to hold retention. So we pay those bills fully, even though we only get 90% perhaps on a 10% retention. And for us, in my industry, 51% of our expenses is labor, payroll. There certainly is no retention to be held on those wages. So when you get to the sub-level, that's where this whole retention thing stops. So it would be a risk management approach, the way I see this, by reducing retention from whatever the dollar amount would be, frequently 10, down to 5, we can cut in half the amount of those dollars that are at risk and put that to work and getting more people to work. Thank you.
Chairman Holvey, members of the committee, I appreciate the time to address you this morning. My name is David Thompson. I'm the Vice President and Controller of Current Electrical Construction Company. We're a commercial electrical contractor with 20 full-time employees in Portland, Oregon, and we've been in business for about 27 years. I also sit on the Board of Directors of the Independent Electrical Contractors of Oregon, and I'm here in support of the bill. As of this morning, we had 26% of our receivables tied up in retention. This figure fluctuates for us between 20 and 35%, averaging around 28%. So at any given time, 28% of my receivables is tied up in retention. Since our bank doesn't recognize retention as collateral for our credit line, our borrowing capacity is limited by this amount. A portion of this retention that I have held on me right now is for a project that was started over 18 months ago and was finished 2 months ago. That's a long time to have your profit tied up. Now, this is money we've earned, and it represents much more than our profit margin on the project. Therefore, it's essentially money we're out of pocket. Our profit margin on a typical project is around 3%. This is common in our industry. If we are having retention withheld at 10%, we're effectively financing the project at no interest for 7% of our total contract. From our standpoint, this is money we've earned that we cannot make any use of. It inhibits our ability to hire new people, to replace equipment, and to grow our company.
limiting the amount of retention that can be withheld to something closer to our profit margin will be a significant stimulus to growth and hiring in our industry. If we free up cash to strengthen our companies, improve our balance sheets, and increase our borrowing capacity, this will lower the cost of construction. All of this can be accomplished with money we've already earned at no additional cost to anybody. That's why I support this bill for the good of the construction industry. I feel that this bill creates jobs, it lowers the cost of construction, and it does all of this without spending a dime of taxpayer money. Thank you.
Thank you both. Questions from the committee? Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I'm just curious if you have ever gotten... Is it a standard practice for you to have received interest on your retainage?
That's never happened.
Never.
Yeah, okay. No. Just thought I'd get that out there. It's not common practice.
No, but we certainly pay the bank interest on it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For either of you or both of you, at the current time, is there a standard amount of retention from contract to contract, or can that vary as well?
It can vary, but we have our favorite contractors who only charge us 5% now, but probably 70 to 80% of our work is withheld at 10%.
Wow. I have similar numbers that a lot of them start at 10%. We try to talk them down to a lower number. Sometimes we're successful, but many times it's just a hard and fast 10%. Take it or leave it.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. And then... As that money is held in retention over here and you're a sub, are you then required to wait until the entire project is complete? But even though you have completed your work, you're waiting until the carpet's in, the paint's done, all the other things are completed as well, even though your electrical stuff is...
Yeah, and pity the poor excavator who's the first guy on the job.
Wow.
Yeah. Frequently what happens in our contract documents is we've presented with a contract from the general contractor, and the general contractor's documents refer to his contract with the owner and have those flow down provisions. So our contract says we are agreeing to be bound by whatever conditions the owner is imposing on the general contractor. So the GC is put in that position where they have to pass it through. They have to pass it down. You know, they're talking about a really big dollar amount. So if they're having 10% help from them, then they turn around and hold it from us. So, you know, that's kind of where that whole problem starts. So it's in the contract documents, and that's...
Other questions? So are the, can you tell us just a little bit about what the, and maybe the next panel will probably be a better to ask this, but what are these amounts being retained for? What is the definition
of retainage,
or what can they retain money for?
To ensure that we'll complete the work, our understanding is that it's to ensure we'll complete the work. Correct. But we have bonds in place for that. We have general liability insurance that's not cheap. So we already pay a lot of money to insure against anything that we might do wrong or fail to complete. And with this bill, we're arguing to get the amount closer to our profit margin, not to dig in so much into the muscle of what we've had to spend to get the job done. That to us makes some sense to have some amount out there to ensure our successful completion. But 10% is punitive.
I agree with what Mr. Thompson is saying. It's, and there's some sense in that, to have that incentive to finish strong and finish the job well. Part of the problem that comes into play is if the contract documents presented to the general contractor say retention will be released upon substantial completion, then the general contractor, when we call and we've finished at some time prior to that perhaps and we inquire about that retention, the response is typically, well, the owner has not yet released the retention because, you know, we're not done. And so that inserts an item that we have no control over. We can finish our work. We do, the contractors generally tell us, well, there's no issues. We're happy with your performance. You've done a great job for us. We have no punch list for you to take care of. However, the retention has not yet been released by the owner.
Okay, thank you. Representative Doherty?
I have a question. So is the owner collecting interest on what they've done, or have they borrowed money, or maybe that's for the next panel?
Perhaps. I mean, I'll make an assumption that at least they're not paying interest on that money because it has not yet been dispersed.
Okay, got it. Mm-hmm.
Representative Kinnegar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know if other states have this and what percentage they require as the maximum?
I wish I brought a document. There is a document that I have that is the 50 states. Mm-hmm. Many states have retention capped at 5%. There are many states that it's open to larger dollar amounts, but there are many states that have it capped at 5%.
Any lower?
I do not know the answer.
Okay.
No, sorry.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just talking, you know how you were referring to your work is done, but you still haven't gotten your retainage. The statute actually allows you to ask the contractor, you say, hey, I want my retainage now, we're done with our work. And this is kind of where things start breaking down. Not necessarily because of the, I think there might be some confusion there, but, and that's also at the point where they have some period of time to get back to you as to whether or not they accept that your work is actually complete.
Mm-hmm.
And then a certain point after that, you're supposed to start getting interest on it, which also doesn't happen. I mean, there's some other issues involving retention other than just the percentage that maybe this committee wants to look at in the future. So just throwing that out there.
Part of the challenge is the private work. It is much more open because of that exception in the statute that, you know, private work and particularly work that's not bonded is a amount to be negotiated for that retention. And back to our contract is, when we accept that contract and we have a pay when paid, pay if paid type clause in there, that's what's hard for us to navigate is, even if there's some rule that says otherwise, then we also have this contract document that says, we don't really owe you this money until we collect it from the person that owes it to us.
Yeah, if I could interject something there too. Even if the law allows you to charge interest to the general contractor, if you want to work for that guy again, you're not going to do it.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And just curious what happens when, in the scenario where you get your retainage paid to you, the general contractor comes along and says, looks good to me, here's your money, you know, in the allotted time period, and then later on an engineer, architect, or inspector comes by and goes, hey, this work doesn't meet our standard. It needs to be, it needs this, this, and this, and it happens to be your work. This is the next panel to ask that question.
Well, that's why we have things like bonds and general liability insurance, and I mean, they have other, and we give them a warranty.
Right.
Our work's warranted. I mean, if something's not done, we're under warranty, we go back out and fix it. But there's already.
I assume you're talking about commercial work, not
commercial work. But I think in any scenario, you're warranting your work.
Okay. Any other questions? Not seeing any. Thanks. Thanks a lot for.
Thank you very much.
Staying active and bringing your issues to us. I'm sure we'll see you again.
Yes, sir.
Next up, Dee Birch and John Rekowitz. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. If you'd state your name for the record.
Yes, I will. Chair Hovey, John, members of the committee, John Rekowitz with AGC, Associated General Contractors, and just so everybody knows who we represent, we are a broad cross-section of the commercial construction industry in the state, meaning our members include union and open, highway and building contractors, specialty contractors, and general contractors, big and small alike. So it's a very broad cross-section. For that reason, the division that Senator Shields talked about in last session, we were deeply involved in that on this issue. We don't like it when we're divided as an industry, so there's been a lot of work go on. And it's also why we're really glad to be here to support this bill as it's currently drafted. A lot of work has gone into drafting a bill that we believe everybody can agree to and everybody benefits. And the reason is the bills in the past have been really pretty complex. And this is a complex area of the law. And you start to tinker tinker with this, well, it has this impact. Can you tinker with this, and it has that impact? So what we tried to do was to come to something that really benefits everybody in the industry across the board. So it really does a simple thing. Overall policy, it treats every party in the chain of commerce the same by capping retainage at 5%, period. No exceptions. All construction. That's a pretty big change, but as you heard in earlier testimony, that is not an uncommon practice across the country. So we went with that, and it does that by capping retainage for owners, generals, specialty, and suppliers. So everybody's treated the same, because everybody shares a different kind of risk, and that's what retainage is about, is to ensure, and Dee Birch here with me in a minute, we'll talk a little bit more about that. There is a value, a need, a reason that retainage exists. The other thing it does, and I believe previous testimony pointed this out, the bill eliminates the current provision that allows for negotiating a higher rate of retainage above 5% if you do not have a performance payment bond. That is eliminated. So what we've tried to do in the law is eliminate any exceptions. Everybody's treated the same, and the cap is 5%, so everybody understands the rules of the game. And I guess what we believe we've done here, and we've been a lot of work going into this, is devise a bill that is simple enough, that is fair enough across the board, the entire supply chain or chain of commerce, so that everybody knows what the deal is and everybody's treated the same. And that's why we could come to it. And we believe it is a consensus bill. We're in agreement with Senator Shields on that. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Dee Birch. He is a member of our board, immediate past president of AGC, and let him talk a little bit more about how this really impacts the kind of questions you were discussing earlier. How do you impact the industry and different parts of the industry? Thank you.
Hi. Yeah, I am Dee Birch. I also serve as the president of Advanced American Construction. It's a heavy civil marine contractor headquartered in Portland. Our organization has been working on this issue for probably 15 years, and when I heard a lot of the discussion and the intricacies and different ideas, those discussions are the kinds of things that have kind of not resulted in a bill that could be supported by the industry. Not because they're not worthy, not because they're not important, because the impacts on different people, from lenders to vendors to owners, it all trickles, and it's very complex. And so we support this bill fully. It's simple, it's elegant, it's very easy to understand, and it brings some fairness to the system. I think something that's overlooked a lot of times is I believe it actually saves money for owners, public and private, the reason being that if the cash flow is more certain, when a contractor is bidding on a project, they don't have to add contingency or, you know, assumptions about slow sure. pay. And so I actually believe that it's there are no losers in this bill the way that it's written. I would request that the committee be very thoughtful and careful about amendments, because the groundwork that's been done and the many years of work that have been put in could collapse over a very well-intentioned, very simple amendment. Sure. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the committee? Sim Kinnegar.
Thank you. I'm not sure I heard you correctly. You were saying that there used to be, or there is in this bill, exceptions if they don't have performance bonds.
Chair Hovey, Representative Kinnegar. John Rakowitz, in existing law currently, the current law is it's 5%. That is the standard set in law. There is a provision in the law that if you do not have a performance bond in place, you are allowed to negotiate above that, and there is no parameters around that. The one element of this bill, the primary element, it eliminates that, because that is the provision that exists in current law that the former the people who are testifying utilized to go above the standard, which is really 5% in the law. But if you don't have a performance bond, you're allowed to negotiate whatever it is you want to negotiate. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so follow up. And what percentage of these projects are done by subcontractors that don't have a performance bond?
Chair Holvey, Representative Kenny Geyer, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I do know that there are all kinds of other means that people use to ensure if there's a subcontractor that does not have a performance bond, mm-hmm. there's all kinds of ways that generals utilize those subcontractors. Mm-hmm. So I think I get what you're. The question is, I don't think it has an impact there because if they have a history of performance with the company, the company's going to utilize them anyway. And frankly, what really has gone on, and I think it's important for the committee to hear, this has probably always been an issue, but in the last 5 years, we're one half the size in Oregon that we once were as an industry. We were 5% of the economy. We're 2.5%. So cash flow now, if it's 1 or 2 or 3%, can make a company live or die. And I don't care, you know, a bigger company just also has a bigger risk. But it's true for small companies. It's true for big companies. It's true. So that's where we got to is this is about cash flow now. And so we tried to find a way that nobody is in any way impacted differently than the risk or than the chain of commerce that they operate in. So that's what the idea was. And the best we can tell, we've vetted this out very broadly, not only with other associations that you've heard from, but internally. And like I said, when we pull a meeting together, we can have 60 or 70 people of every ilk that I described. Open union, general specialty, and it can get complex. But on this one, people see it as an advantage to the entire industry. No losers, only winners. And there is the precedent across the country that this is, I don't know the numbers, but this is a number that's out there. And frankly, in Oregon law today is 5%, except for the exceptions. Mm-hmm. And we're just taking all exceptions out. That's what we're really doing.
Thank you.
Another question, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to reaffirm something I think you just said, i.e. that providing greater certainty to the bidding process by eliminating some of the unknowns, if you will, i.e. the level of retention, the amount of time that you would have to carry your debt, basically, your costs incurred, can actually help clear up some of that to make your bids much more precise and could actually lower the level of the bid, and they, i.e. perhaps the amount of money required for this public project. Is that what you're referring to?
That's exactly correct. I mean, you that's very well said. And, you know, I just on a in today's environment, when we bid a very simple, mm-hmm. straightforward project for a public agency, the documents are that thick, okay? And the costs associated with that are very real.
Yeah.
And anything that simplifies and provides the value to the public in the way that the value, instead of just layer of after layer after layer, is helpful. And this, I believe, is a small step in the right direction.
Representative Thatcher.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. John, you were talking about how if a company doesn't provide a performance bond, mm-hmm. but they have performance, you know, they have a history, oh. of performing. So do you think, or was there any discussion about this potentially impacting emerging businesses that don't have a big history but still getting the performance bonds are quite difficult? Do you think this would hurt them?
I'll take it if you don't mind. We have a lot of the requirements that we have are to utilize set aside small business and other disadvantaged businesses, and so there are issues about trying to find an avenue to work with someone who may or may not be able to provide a payment and performance bond. I don't really think that this does damage to that because you know, holding a higher retention on someone who can't get a bond is not helpful to them. And so at least this takes one barrier and kind of keeps it in line. It doesn't really address or help resolve that issue, but it doesn't make it worse.
Chair Holvey, Representative Thatcher, I would add that the size of businesses you're talking about, the retainage, given the size of contract or subcontract, it's not very much money. So it really doesn't provide much of anything. It's actually that element, that the provision of the law that this would eliminate, is actually utilized in the ways that I believe that the people who just testified is more utilized in that manner, if that makes sense to you as a member of the industry.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, our committee is consumer protection, okay, and all the focus mm-hmm. is on what's good for the industry and what's good for the contractors. And so I'm trying to anticipate how, kind of in line with what Representative Thatcher mm-hmm. was asking, what consequence it has on those that, you know, the prior panel said, well, but we're bonded. Well, if there are those that are not, don't have a performance bond, and, mm-hmm. and so now it's going to be 5% is going to be the total retainage, and you have no performance bond, mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out how that affects the consumer, the people that are entering yeah. into the contract if they're not assured by the normal bonding faculties or...
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's a really great question. Mm-hmm. You know, the art of crafting a contract to protect your interest, this is just one little tiny element of it. The, you know, the folks that know how to put those contracts together, you know, there are performance measures, the way that work is measured, certifications required prior to full payment. I think that Mr. Redman described it well. This is really talking about money that's already earned per the terms of the contract, whatever that is. So it really doesn't damage an owner, either public or private, from protecting their interest within their contract. It just deals with the issue of retention and retention only. Does that answer your question?
I guess because there's a warranty and you're still there. And
absolutely.
I
mean, and the public work is virtually 100% bonded, and the private work, a high percentage of it is bonded also. So there's another level of protection.
Chair Hovey, Representative Richardson, I think I understand what you're getting at. This is not going to take away the general. Is going to be required. There's no general. It's not in public work. Certainly, is as he just testified to, not going to have a performance bond. So if you're asking the question, is the public owner still protected in this way? Yes, they are. What this does is cap the percentage of retainage held, starting with the owner all the way through, to get at the kinds of problems that the people that just testified. But there is a place for retainage. That's why bills that have come up before where it wanted to eliminate it or it wanted to reduce it for one party in the chain of commerce didn't make any sense to us, and we opposed them. And so what we're trying to create is a understandable, level, clear playing field for everybody. But the owners themselves, they're not going to allow D's, a general contractor, to get a job without a performance payment bond and all kinds of other assurances. And you might tick off some of those kinds of assurances. There's no less assurance for the public owner themselves.
All right. Thank you.
So my turn. So I'm curious, and maybe this is Representative Thatcher brought up a question that made me think of, for example, minority contractors. I'm thinking of a federal project that retains money for the performance of hiring minority women small business contractors, and they have their own set of retainage requirements in regards to making sure that quota is hit. So how would this bill impact that?
Well, I'm going to try to take a shot at this, Chair Hovey, and then Dee maybe can add. Let me see if I can tease out what the question is and try to answer it. First of all, this bill, this retainage bill, the question has come up before. So you have a retainage, and I think this gets at your question, at a federal level, for whatever purpose it may be. We're talking performance. This is about performance. Are you performing the job or not? Federal law trumps. So if there is a federal anything, say we had the discussion this morning about an SBA loan, if that's a part of the federal requirements, it's simply going to be trumped, whatever needs to occur, because you don't want to shut down sources, or you can't shut down sources. The federal law will trump. I don't know if that gets at your full question, but this applies where the state law applies, not where federal law comes in. And federal money has all kinds of things attached to it, including what you talked about and a million other things, and that's not going to get in the way of this. This simply lays a standard down when there's not something that supersedes it. Does that answer your question?
Pretty close.
Okay.
But I already knew that part.
Right. The I mean, we do a tremendous amount of federal work, primarily for the Corps. The FARs have allowances to allow owners to hold no retention. And because they have so many other requirements and so many other hurdles that you have to pass at the sole discretion of the agency, they waive retention altogether because they have the performance and payment bond, they have the contract to rely on, they have the warranties, they still have money typically that's owed to the contractor, and they have mechanisms to enforce their contract and to be protected if the contractor were to fail financially. So I don't believe that this action would in any way inhibit or affect federal contracting.
So to follow up on my question, you know, and it may be sort of a moot point, but certainly the relationship between the general and the prime and the federal agency wouldn't be impacted by this, but I was more curious about the relationship between the prime and the sub in those scenarios.
That's a really good question. I don't, in the absence of a federal requirement that would supersede it, I would assume that it's enforceable at this 5% level.
Okay. That was my guess too, but I just wanted to see what you said.
Yeah.
The other question I have, because I don't see any public agencies owners signed up, I know there's one county in the back of the room who said he's okay with the bill, but so did the state DAS or did they participate in this conversation at all as an owner representative?
Chair Hovey, there's been this is strictly an industry conversation, but you know how it is in the hallways and bills. This has already been through the Senate, been through Senate Business and Transportation. There was no testimony of or questions of any kind, and then it went through the Senate floor. I think it was 26 or 27 to 3 or 4. So there's been no questions. I have personally touched bases with the individual in the room and others, and nobody has raised an issue to me yet. And this has been in place since the beginning of the session. So they were not a party to the thing, but they didn't, there's been no questions, no issues, no anything to date.
They didn't show up, essentially, is what you're saying.
Oh, no, I've done some outreach, and people are just, they're not saying anything about it. I explain what the bill is, they want to know what the bill is, what it does, and I tell them, and so far there's been absolutely no comment.
Okay. All right. Not seeing much else for questions. Thank you for coming forward and helping explain this bill to us.
Thank you.
Anyone else that would like to testify on Senate Bill 405? Oh, there is one. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
For the record, Caleb Hayes here on behalf of NECA, the National Electrical Contractors Association, and AWCC, the Associated Wall and Ceiling Contractors Association. We were not involved in drafting the bill, but we'd like to place our support on the record.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for this NECA AWCC? Nope, you're out. Thank you very much. With that, I'll close public hearing on Senate Bill 405A. In committee, we have one other agenda item. And with that, I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 23. Bob, remind the committee about what Senate Bill 23 does.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 23 makes technical and housekeeping amendments to statutes related to regulation of real estate activities. The measure declares an emergency and is effective on passage, has no revenue impact, and no fiscal impact, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Would somebody like to give me a motion on Senate Bill 23?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 23 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Smith moves Senate Bill 23 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, questions? Does the department have any comments that they'd like to make about Senate Bill 23? Or the agency, I should say, not department, excuse me. Not seeing any. We have a motion. Samantha?
Representative Vega Peterson?
She's excused.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Excused.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Senate Bill 23, having received required votes, is passed to the floor. I've been trying to get something on the consent calendar. How about technical changes to real estate? If you no objection, we'll put this one on the consent calendar. With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 23, and we will adjourn the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency.